Life is a journey. What's your story? Well, I am here today with a famous pianist and a famous author and one of my favorite people. I met him a couple years ago when I was writing about his children's book. Chaim Freeburg is here with me today. Welcome, Chaim.
Thank you very much.
So I'm going to start off by saying November 4th, between 4 and 6 o'clock, Chaim will be at the St. Pete Library on 360, excuse me, St. Pete Beach Library, 365 73rd Avenue at an author event. And so you can meet him. Our friend Kathy Celestri and Carrie Kreisman, who you've also heard on Radio St. Pete, are there. But what we're going to talk about first today is the project that he has been working on, which is just fascinating. A famous woman. You would think that Golda Meir was the most famous Israeli. But Chaim, tell us a little bit about Henrietta Zold.
Yes, I would love to tell you. Could I just read the first paragraph from my
presentation?
Yes. That was the best way that I could express it. In her foreword to Dvorah HaKohen's thorough biography of Harriet Zold, Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote in January 9, 2020, "In my growing up years, my mother held the highest esteem for three Jewish women, Emma Lazarus, Lillian Wald, and Henrietta Zold. She praised their devotion to the public good, their brave efforts to repair a broken world. As a child, I was indeed inspired by those way-paving women, and I remain touched by their example to this day." That was Ruth Bader Ginsburg. For me, all these many years that I've been living in the United States, my Israeli identity never faded. It always remained very, very strong. And I think that as perhaps many writers experience the same thing, I am completely consumed with going back into my earlier years and trying to recap those years and those days. And I remember as a child, I was born in a small town a month before Israel was declared a state, and had a four years younger brother. He was a baby, and my mother always went, she said, "We have to go to Hadassah now." And Hadassah for us was a nurse's station, and they took care of babies and they evaluated the health and gave. And then life is a cycle. Later on, when I lived in New York, I was hired by a woman by the name Tzipora Yochsberger. She was the former director of the Rubin Academy of Music in Jerusalem, and I was a student at Juilliard. And her school was called the Hebrew Art School, where it was open to everyone, but she wanted to emphasize all the treasures that the Hebrew culture could offer. So I remained in that milieu, and I met a wonderful woman by the name Arlene Carmen Kempner, who was way in the late 40s. She was a principal singer with the New York City Opera. We befriended, and she asked me to accompany her in some fundraising events for Hadassah. And in no time, I just became totally involved with Hadassah, and I always felt it's an important organization. And I'm still involved with Hadassah.
You know, the thing that is so amazing, so I've had the pleasure of reading this, and I encourage all of you to go to this event in St. Pete Beach and learn more. It was that she was actually born in Baltimore.
She was Baltimore, and I read somewhere that if she was born in 1960 instead of 1860, she would have become a rabbi.
And, you know, what a courageous woman she was, and how she recognized, and her mother recognized, her mother told her, right?
Yes.
That this is her
task, and this is her destiny.
Right, right. And, you know, even Mark Twain said, "Was this the land of dreams?" That was his impression of the old city. I mean, it was devastated by malaria. It was devastated,
yes,
by serious eye disease.
Yes.
And Henrietta wrote in her journal, "When we left, my mother said, 'But not Zion. You must provide practical help in the new land.'" Tell us a little bit about what Henrietta did.
Yes, well, Henrietta, since her entire life is really presented in the book, there were some personal elements there, and it's not a coincidence. She was a very sensitive woman. She was extremely intelligent, and she was an editor, and she befriended a very famous poet, and she apparently was hoping that he will marry her, and she, when that didn't happen, she got into deep depression, and out of the depression, she was propelled into finding new directions in her life. And she wanted to find something, or she eventually found a mission that transcended her personal life. And so what she did was she took a trip to Palestine at the time, 1909. Now, I have to make something clear. What you hear about Palestine today, I mean, as a territory, is not what Palestine was in 1909. In 1909, Palestine was a huge territory that some of it included Transjordan. And I just want people not to be confused between what they hear now about Palestine and what Palestine was then. So she went to Europe, and they took a side trip to Palestine. And she experienced, and at that time, the first immigration was already, I mean, they had little settlements of Russian Jews who came from, Jews who came from Russia. And she got connected with, she felt something that was very important to her. And she, that's how she got started. And especially she was impacted by the health hazards that she encountered. And she was the first woman, she brought two nurses to Jerusalem, and they were the first nurses. And in time it became, she wanted to build a healthcare system. And that's how it started. And she was very dedicated, and she was instrumental in everything that was improved in the situation.
And in fact, she died at the same hospital that she founded.
She died, Mons Opus.
Right.
The hospital which is now open again. I'm saying that because after the 67 war, Israel took united Jerusalem, united the city of Jerusalem, but Mount Scopus was disconnected. So they had to go with army vehicles every so often to that territory to claim that, you know, that is in Israeli territory, but it could not be open for services. And that's where the old campus of the Hebrew University is also, but now it's all open.
So, in addition to this wonderful story, you also have written operatic stories filled with melodrama, romance, and adventure.
Yes.
Lily Flowers Finds Love and Other Tales of Passion. That was published by St. Petersburg Press a couple years ago.
Yes.
These are opera fantasy stories. Tell us
yes.
a little bit about these.
Okay. I had a lot of fun writing these stories. And I actually have fun with every fiction story because I can... There's a lot of me in those stories, you know, as I'm sure many other writers feel. So they're not entirely fiction, but I took some, I dedicated the stories to the legend of the diva, you know, the opera diva. And every story is based on a real person. I modeled after a real person. Now, what I wanted to do was kind of, it's like a little comic situation, but not only in some of the stories that turned out not to be a comic. I took the opera story and I sometimes gave it a little twist in a way that what happened on the stage, instead of the singer becoming the role starts to become the singer. And what happens to her on the stage, she starts losing perspective. Is it happening to me on the stage? It turns out it's happening to her also in real life. I can give a few examples.
Yes.
I mean, if you know the plots of different operas, in the opera Tosca. Do you know the story of Tosca? So Tosca takes time in a political tragedy in Rome, and also based on true story, and she's being blackmailed by the police chief, who is a very corrupt man, and He blackmails her, and he's basically more than harassing her. And then there is the famous scene where she stabs him with a knife. But the singer herself in my story, her name is Bruna Ferrari. And why do I call her Bruna? Because in the opera Tosca, Tosca gets very jealous that her lover paints the Madonna in blonde. And why is she not a brunette? So what happens is that Bruna Ferrari, is a very famous singer. But in her secret life, she's in love with someone who is in the underground against the regime. And he is a painter in the theater. He does the sets. And the theater manager is doing to her what Scarpia is doing to Tosca in the plot. And at the end of the story, Bruna, she's singing that famous aria, you know, and she's enraged. Tosca is enraged a bit about Scarpia. But Bruna Ferrari is seeing the manager in the wings waiting for her. And she's enraged double at him. And in the glare of the light, she sees a real pair of scissors that was left by the stage people, and it's glaring at her. And she does a sign of the cross, and instead of going to stab Scarpia on the role on the stage, she turns the other way. And he says, "Where are you going?" And she doesn't say anything but her. She just goes and she stabs the man in the wings on the stage, and he comes dripping blood on the stage, and everybody thinks that it's part of the production.
I love that.
And the police is already outside, but they are waiting for her to sing her final aria. And she gets an ovation, and at the end of the story is, I would have brought you a copy of the book to keep, I'll give you next time when I see you. As they say, nobody has ever sung Tosca better than Bruna Ferrari in her legendary final performance. And she gets an ovation from the police waiting for her outside.
You know, it's no wonder that you lived near Lincoln Center in New York City in the midst of all the storm and drama. You know, my mother loved the opera, and even as a young poor girl in Elizabeth, New Jersey, would go to see it, and my cousin and she would always have opera tickets. What I really like, and when you and I first met, is you also wrote music is a driving force for your writing.
Yes.
And you wrote two children's books.
Yes.
Miss Adelaide's Piano and Other Tales of Music and Love, and Miss Flora and the Squirrel.
Yes.
And Other Tales of Friendship and Gratitude. Tell me a little bit about how you use music in these children's books to inspire.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to say that my children's books are not childish books. They can be they have a lesson in them, you know. And for example, and I always how I use music there is one of the in every story there is the music is a connecting link of the story, of the plot. So, for example, I wrote a little story about the crow who learns how to sing. So the crow, for me, is someone who was excluded from, you know, who is desperate to sing. But in every story that I write, there is always somebody who is excluded from. You can't sing in the choir because you're not singing in tune with everybody. So the crow is left behind while all the flock of birds, of crows, travels south. And he's staying in a place in Charleston called the Angel Oak. It's a very famous tree. And he's left alone and he's old. He's not able to continue the trip. And he's all alone, and all of a sudden he hears these little birds, the singing birds. And he joins their choir and they take him in. And he finds a new family through his singing. They give him some voice lessons, and so it's that's how I include it.
I love that. And so your mother was very instrumental in shaping your world. I mean, she emigrated from Poland to Palestine before it became Israel to escape the Nazis.
That's another link to Hadassah. She was part of Youth Aliyah.
Tell us a little bit about
well,
that.
Well, usually Hadassah sold, Henrietta sold, was instrumental in saving many young people from the Holocaust and from Germany. And she created those, she got permission from the British to bring children into Palestine at the time that was administered by the British government. But only the children could leave. The parents had to stay wherever they were. It all started first in Germany. And she created little preparation camps called Hakshara, which were like, Hakshara means in Hebrew to get somebody the skills to be able to fit into a new situation. And it started in Germany, and later on it expanded to Poland, and my mother was born in Poland. And she came as a youngster to Israel, to Palestine in 1934. She left her entire family there. She never saw them again. And my father was a policeman for the British authority, and he looked at her papers, and that the next thing was they were married.
Wow!
And well, not right away, but. That's how she met my father. But she went first to a kibbutz. They sent her to a kibbutz. My mother was a very independent woman. And the funny story, they put her in a kibbutz in the north called Shavei Tzion. And she was with a girlfriend. Apparently, she didn't feel that she wanted to live in a community where everybody tells her what she should be doing. And she practically escaped with a girlfriend. In the middle of the night, they waited for a train that came from Lebanon, and they hopped on the train, and they simply found their way, and they settled in Haifa, where my oldest brother was born.
You know, people don't realize the distinguished career you've had, piano and voice at the Kaufman Music Center, 42 years.
Yeah.
The number of people, as we were talking earlier, this person was a student of mine. They're coming to the symphony here. How did you end up in St. Pete?
Oh, well, I'll be very honest with you. I'll make it very simple. In 2016, I was in a place in my personal life where I had to make new decisions, and I really needed a new direction in my life, you know, and I wanted to do something new, and I didn't know that I was going to move, but I met my friend Jim, that you just saw him, and he's a wonderful person, and he told me about St. Pete, and that he wants to move, to live here, and I took a trip with him, and when I first came here, I looked around and I said, that reminds me of Israel here. You know, there is something about the climate and about the beach. And I moved here. I finally moved here permanently in 2019. And I've never looked back. And I'm very content here.
Well, we love having you here. And I know that you love Chopin and Rachmaninoff.
Yes.
What are you listening to these days classically?
Most of it I listen on YouTube, and I have the luxury of looking, finally really enjoying music when I don't have to play it anymore. Because I don't compare myself to anybody, and I'm so open, and I have a friend in New York that we constantly correspond. And we also somehow a little bit complain about what happened to the old school, where everything and now, you know, it's so different, you know, and... So I listen to everything, by the way. I discover new pianists from the past and new music. And I sent you that little, the story, you know, about the woman who plays Chopin. I also wrote a very long story called Poem in Four Strings. It's based on Chausson's poem for violin. And the story is, I love that story. It's about a girl who grows in an English Puritan home, turn of the century, Boston. And against all odds, she falls madly in love with an Orthodox Jewish boy who goes to the conservatory. And it's kind of a Romeo and Juliet story, but it ends differently. But as you can see, all these issues really are very personal things for me.
You know, it's wonderful. Do you think that you'll write a biography? Is that in the works? You have so much to share. Do you feel that you're going to...
Autobiography?
Yes.
I would love to do that, but I have to be ready for it.
Not yet.
You will find a lot of my biography in my stories if you knew me. For example, the story of Miss Adelaide's piano takes place in a train station. And my first lessons were in the train station in Afula because we had the old train that was still part of the Turkish Ottoman administration. And I sent pictures of the train station is still there. And I was inspired. This is how I started playing the piano. So let me tell you, now that I'm getting started. I was 5 years old, and I went to kindergarten, small town. And at that time, you know, I was allowed to go alone places, to go home alone. Nobody had to pick me up. And there was a train station, and there was a piano teacher there. And I hear the music, and I'm 5 years old, and I'm walking on that thing that I can look through the window inside, and I see the back of the girl play piano, and she plays the Moonlight Sonata. I was totally fascinated. And then I started asking for piano lessons. And eventually I was giving piano lessons, but we didn't have money to buy a piano, so we had neighbors who brought a piano. And the mother said, I'm glad somebody's playing this piano. And that was the beginning of it. But the anecdote is that the woman who played the piano, she must have been 16. Years later, she came to New York. Her name is Tamar Rosenfeld, and her sister was a pianist, Ofra Yerushalmi. She passed away. She became my student. Isn't life...
Life's beautiful.
It's just so difficult to explain, you know. I admired her, and then she became my student.
Well, for those of you who are listening to this incredible man, Chaim Freiberg, an artist, a poet, with his words, please catch his talk at the library, St. Pete Beach Library, Monday, 4 to 6 p.m. More importantly, go to Amazon, look up his books.
Thank you.
Take them out from the library. Look at his tremendous career as a musician. And remember that his story continues. His story continues, and we look forward, Chaim, to having you back in. Parting words for our listeners today on Radio St. Pete.
Thank you. I'm very thankful for being here and letting me express myself and your encouragement.
Thank you so much, and we look forward to chatting with you again about your next book. For Radio St. Pete, I'm Nanette Weiser.
Thank you.